Welcome to Full Circle with Jerry Bryant. It's the classic Jesus music radio show. It's a look back at where it all began. This is Full Circle, looking back at the beginnings of today's contemporary Christian music. Now here's your host, Jerry Bryant.
Hi, everybody. This is Jerry Bryant. Welcome to Full Circle.
Would you lay down your life, give it up for you, brother? And keep going. Are you taking the given? Have your motives been solid? We've got to walk in the Spirit, walk in love. Yes, we ought to walk as the Master walked. Jesus gave the great command. Yes, we ought to do what he wants us to do. What do people see in you? When we see a mistake, we've got to stop criticizing. Before it's too late, we've got to start realizing. Should lead men to grace instead of looking and despising. We've got to walk in the Spirit, walk in love.
All right. You know, Bill, I'm starting to think that I probably first met you in Greenville, Illinois. You and the band Sunlight were there in that concert backing Andre Crouch, and probably got my first copy of Sunlight about that time. Little did I know I'd be living in Woodland Hills, California, pastoring Last Days Community with Keith and Melody. And then you're helping shape the sonic identity of early CCM. I mean, you were playing and producing on so many albums, all of Keith's albums. We'll talk about that. And then I want to talk about, obviously, other bands you've helped start. And we got a lot we can talk about. But I want to thank you for coming on the program. It's been a long time. We've talked. I know it has been.
Well, it was 72 when Sunlight joined Andre Crouch.
That's right.
And Sunlight left Andre at about 73, and I stayed on. And then Fletch stayed on. So we were only there for about a year. Maybe early 74, but Harlan and Hadley quit and moved back to Oklahoma, which is where we're from.
Well, yeah, you were an Oklahoma boy, learned to play and drums back in that time, and then went to LA later on. But I remember that conversation that night at Greenville College. I was sitting there thinking, how could these guys be so good as to support Andre? I thought, this is really amazing how this is happening. Of course, I didn't realize at the time you'd been involved in other efforts and bands, and everything just kind of progressed over the years. But that was a real, I guess for me, I would say it was a breakthrough time for you and Sunlight to get a little backing from Andre. Never hurts one bit. You know, when you saw that coming, I mean, it was faster than you probably imagined it would come. And then your time with Keith Green all these years. Well, I want to talk about that. I kind of think of you, Bill, as a bridge builder. I mean, you certainly are a connector. I've watched you connect all kinds of music as a drummer and also as a producer. We're going to talk about all of those phases, but maybe the first thing, why did you get drawn into music at the time and make such a big move from Oklahoma to Los Angeles?
I've been a musician my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started working professionally when I was 13. And I played with an Indian guitar player, Native American guitar player named Jesse Ed Davis from Oklahoma City. I was in his band, and he became very well known for his work with Jackson Browne and John Lennon and Rod Stewart. And I was in his band working professionally, and at 14, I met Harlan Rogers, and we started playing in nightclubs right before my 15th birthday. And I played six nights a week in nightclubs. I wasn't a Christian. I'd gone to church some as a kid, but you'd take me in the front door, and I'd slip out the back door while my grandparents who raised me were in church, and so I was not interested in that. I just wanted to play music and be as good as I could be. I wanted to be the best drummer I could be. I started out, my first instrument was piano because my mother was a professional piano player, but she died when I was 2 months old. And so I think that my grandparents put me in music school at 2 years old. So I've been reading music and playing music. It was a part of me my whole life. So to me, I'd already had a lot of experience before I moved to California in 1972.
Who was in the band again? For those who might not know, tell us just a tiny bit about Sunlight.
Through the Billy Graham crusade, I received the Lord. I led Harlan Rogers to the Lord. And then everything terrible that could possibly happen to our band happened. We had a record that was doing well, and then it just crashed. T-Bone Burnett had produced our first album. The band was called the Third Avenue Blues Band. And it was Harlan Rogers, Hadley Hawkins Smith, and myself, a saxophone player named Bob Beasley, trumpet player named Daryl Leonard, and Harold Jones was our singer. And so it started falling apart, and then Harlan had some emotional problems mentally. He went through just a severe attack, and it wasn't until 1971, the fall of 71, Hadley quit the band, became a part of a church in Oklahoma City. It was really a mission called the Open Door, and was playing guitar there and helping the pastor, who was a former drummer. And I moved to Nashville, and I rededicated my life to the Lord in Nashville, came back to Oklahoma, started playing with Hadley at the church, and then I led Harlan to the Lord. He quit the Third Avenue Blues Band, which he was still in, and then I went up, I had to play a couple of concerts with them, and I led Fletch Wiley to the Lord that night. God delivered him from heroin. So the four of us started a band, and we were playing at the Open Door Mission in Oklahoma, and Ken Copeland heard about us, and he told Andre about us. So when Andre came in to play a concert at Bethany College, we went to see him, and he said, "Ken Copeland told me about you guys. I'd love to hear your music." So we invited him down to the little mission, and we played him a bunch of songs that we had written, and he said, "You guys need to be my band. My band's not that experienced." And that's how it started. We didn't really want to do it at first, but we went to Expo 72, which is a Billy Graham event.
I was there too. Yeah, I was there.
We got invited to be a house band for Benson Music, Benson Records, for any of the artists that didn't have a band. So we backed up Randy Matthews, Reba Rambo, Connie Smith, and I think a few other people. And Andre was there again, and that's when he started, "You've got to be my band. You've got to be my band." We were doing a short tour with Reba and Randy Matthews, and I had a message to call Andre, and he said, I got booked on the Tonight Show, and I don't think my band is good enough to do it. Could you and Hadley fly out to California? I'll fly you out to play on the Tonight Show." And he said, "Sure." And so we flew out, and he picked us up in his tour bus at the airport. We went over and did a rehearsal that night. Next night, we went to NBC, and we did the show live. And that was my first time playing with Andre.
Oh, that's the reason I say that Jesus is the answer for the world today. Above him there's no other, 'cause Jesus is the way. Sing along with us. Jesus is
today.
Above him there's no other.
For Jesus is the way. Sandra.
If you have some questions in the corners of your mind and traces of discouragement and peace you cannot find, reflections of your past seem to face you every day. But this one thing I do know, that Jesus is the way.
Cannot climb. I know your skies are dark. You think the sun won't shine. In case you don't know, but the word of God is true, and everything He's promised, He will do it for you. That's the reason I say,
Jesus is.
Ended up co-producing Andre's first album I did with him called Take Me Back. And when we turned it in, the record company thought it was not going to be a success. They thought I'd really messed up Andre because it was a little more funky than what he had done. Andre's records were pretty conservative, though. Great songwriting, great message. But we added a lot of different things. The album had blues on it, had gospel, had Dixieland. It had even a Hawaiian praise kind of song. It was all over the place. But it ended up being very successful. And it won its first Grammy, so I got attention as a producer. And Keith Green said it was his favorite album of the year. And he had Billy Ray Hearn asked if he knew how to get a hold of me. And I had been playing drums on some early Billy Ray Hearn productions. He was at Word Records, and then he left to start his own. He was at Murr, and then he started his own label, Sparrow. And he had signed Keith Green. And Billy Ray called and said, I've got someone that I want you to meet. I think you guys will work well together. And that was Keith, and that's how I met Keith.
I found it hard to believe someone like you cared for me. You put this love in my heart. I tried but could not refuse. You gave me no time to choose. To say how you put this love. find me out. You put this love in my heart. 'Cause when I see all that you've done for me, it's hard to doubt. I just have to believe. 'Cause you're following, proving all of your love. Well, I know the loneliness I had before is gone.
Maxwell, and you're listening to Full Circle with Jerry Bryant, taking you back to where it all began.
Again, divine appointment, because yeah, we had no idea what was going to happen with Keith. I actually was introduced by Billy Ray. Said, you know, you need to book the Electric Jew. I said, the Electric Jew? Are you kidding? And he said, yeah, this guy named Keith Green, he's got a new album out. Little did I know I would be living in Last Days pastoring Last Days Community with Keith and Melanie, and what a ride that was. And he was also the matchmaker. He introduced my wife to me. She was the first member, the first member that lived there at Last Days. What a memory. But let's look for just a moment.
Yeah.
You know, we learned a lot from Keith. You did as well, as you had to kind of walk around and see some different parts of Keith that no one had ever seen. You know, the album, for example, For Him Who Has Ears to Hear, 1977.
Actually, when I recorded that album, it was at a place called Studio 55 and Studio B in the back. And Keith had played me some demos that he had, and they were very good, but they weren't remarkable, but they were good. And then he sat down and played and sang me some songs at the piano, and they were fantastic. And I said, why do you sound so much better playing piano and singing these songs to me than you do on the demos? And he said, well, I cut the demos and I go in and record my vocals. And I said, you stand up and sing through the tracks. He said, yeah. I said, you sound better when you sing and play live. Let's try to find a way to do that. So I went in with minimal musicians because I didn't know what was going to happen. And Keith had a bass player that he'd grown up playing with, Todd Fishkin. And he said, I like playing with Todd. And I said, great. So let's go in. And we found a way to isolate the piano, baffle it up, put mics inside, put a microphone around him, the mics on the piano, and put him in a room by himself. And he would play and sing live. I played drums live. Todd played bass live. We could fix the bass, couldn't fix the drums. But if Keith made a mistake in his piano or in his voice, we would do the song over. So by the time we finished the tracks, we essentially had finished vocals on 10 songs. And that was the live part of it. The overdubs, I overdubbed Dean Parks, Harlan Rogers arranged strings, I overdubbed strings, and then James Felix, Danny Bell Hall, and Keith sang background vocals. And then Mike Dacey added some acoustic guitar. That was all that there was on it. Keith, all his songs that we did were ready for me. When I recorded Keith's first album, I had the pick of all of his songs, and I picked what I thought were the best ones, and that was right at the top.
How can they live without Jesus? How can they live without Jesus?
God's love. How can they feel so at home down here when there's so much more up above? Throwing away the things that matter, they hold on to things that don't. The world has gone crazy, but soon maybe a lot more are gonna know. For maybe they don't understand just haven't heard. Maybe we're not doing all we can, living up to His holy word. 'Cause follies have come and wrong's been done, even killing in Jesus' name. And if you've been burned, here's what I've learned: the Lord's not the one to blame. For He's just not religion with steeples and bells, or a salesman who will sell you the things you just want to hear. For His love was such that He suffered so much to call some of us just to follow. So many laughing at Jesus, while the funniest thing that He's done is love this whole stubborn rebel. While their hate for Him just goes on. And love just like that will bring Him back for the few He can call His friends. The ones He's found true, who've made it through, enduring until the end. The ones He's found true, who've made it through, enduring until
so many albums for the late Keith Green, 1977, 1982. In case you don't know them, I do, and he does. For Him Who Has Ears to Hear, No Compromise, So You Want to Go Back to Egypt, and then later on, Songs for the Shepherd. The Keith Green collection came before that, and then the compilations started coming out, and I'll talk about that later on. But what I think is important is your relationship with Him had to evolve, because everyone that I knew, including you, would say that He was really driven with His message. He was very prophetic in His nature. Had a kind of, I would call it, a driving urgency about everything. And after that first album, then in 78, wasn't it Sparrow put out No Compromise? And that was, again, you know, very message-driven. Songs like Asleep in the Light that no one will ever forget. Or How Can They Live Without Jesus? Tell us a little bit, what was happening in that time with you as you were adjusting, not only playing the instrument, but producing the album for a wild man, our friend Keith Green?
Well, he was definitely a challenge. Keith was very strong in his opinions and what he wanted, and he was very blunt. And sometimes he would be blunt to musicians, and I'd say, Keith, you gotta take it easy. You're gonna rob them of their joy, and then you're not gonna get the best out of them. And so we worked our way through all of that. Keith got better, I got better at working with him. But I know that, you know, the first album, we had very little money. We didn't know how the record was gonna do, and it did really well. It was, I think, Sparrow's biggest album at that time, and Keith was very popular, and so our record budget went up 3 times from what it was on the second album. And later on, when I met Bob Dylan through Keith, Bob Dylan said, you know, Keith Green's first album was my favorite album of the year. What happened to the second album? And I said, well, we had more money, so we have more time to mess it up. But I don't think we messed it up, but he liked the rawness of the first one. The second one was more polished, had more overdubs, was more specific, a lot of multiple guitar parts with Hadley, more background vocals, more elaborate strings that we had arranged by a great Swedish arranger, Lennart Sjöholm. It was a bigger production. But you're right, there were some great songs and very prophetic songs. But it wasn't the raw wildness of that first album.
Bill, let me take just a break. I'm taking a moment to let everyone know how to reach me and hear interviews such as this and other great classics. Go to www.FullCircleJesusMusic.com. That's FullCircleJesusMusic.com. You might want to support this show with your prayers. That would be amazing. And if you want to support us financially and help us underwrite this episode, go to the top of the page, tag the donate button. Of course, there's no obligation. All gifts are tax exempt. Thanks to those who subscribe on a regular basis and like us at Full Circle Jesus Music on Facebook. Tell your friends about the show. Now, let's go back to the interview with Bill as we move into another decade.
Well, then we went into 1980. Pretty Good started their little company, and this album, of course, that had Bob Dylan playing. He was on harmonica, I think.
That's right. Wedge My Head to Heaven.
Will I pledge my head to heaven for the gospel? And I ask no man on earth to fill my needs. Like the sparrow up above, I am enveloped in his love. And I trust him like those little ones. Will I pledge my wife to heaven for the gospel? Though I love each passing day, just seems to grow. As I told her when we wed, I'd surely rather be found dead than to love her more than the one who saved my soul. I pledge my wife, I pledge my head to heaven.
pledge my son, I pledge my wife, I pledge my head to heaven for the gospel.
Hi, I'm Bill Maxwell from Koinonia. You're listening to Full Circle with Jerry Bryant.
Welcome back to part two. This is Jerry Bryant, and I'm trying to figure out how to feature some great instrumental songs from Koinonia, where Bill was playing drums. So I guess for this episode only, I'm going to have to start with instrumental, More Than a Feeling, Koinonia. And Bill, I'll just let you go ahead and fill in. The group was active from 1980 to 1991, at least, and the co-founder back then in 1980 was Abraham Laboriel.
My involvement with Koinonia started, had no idea something like this would happen, but I got a call. I think it was Michael Amardian that called me, but it could have been Buck Herring, to play drums on a recording for the second chapter of Acts. I was doing a recording session for Andre Crouch, and we had a great saxophone player named Ernie Watts who did most of the sessions, and Ernie had a band that was playing at the Baked Potato called Friendship, and in that band was Alex Acuna on drums, Anthony Jackson on bass, which is a great bass player. And I told Ernie, I said, I've got to come hear your band because I love Anthony Jackson. And he said, no, Anthony Jackson's not with the band anymore. We have a better bass player. And I said, better than Anthony Jackson? He said, yeah. I said, who? And he said, Abraham Laboriel. I said, really? I said, well, you need to come out. He's amazing. And so this was 2 days before my session with the second chapter of Acts. I went to that session, and Michael Martin had hired Abraham on bass and Jay Graydon on guitar. And so that's when I met Abraham. And Abraham, I didn't know anything about him, but he came up and said, the music you produced has touched my life. He got tears in his eyes. He talked about Andre's This Is Another Day album, how it, something happened to him spiritually with it. And so we had a double session booked that day, which is 3 hours with an hour break and then three more hours. We did the hour break. Everyone was going to lunch, and Abraham said, are you going to go to lunch? And I said, I'm not really hungry. And he said, do you want to stay here and jam? I said, sure. And so the engineer put up a 15 IPS tape and recorded us playing live. We played for the whole hour, two tapes. And then he said, let's start a band. Me and you need to start a band. And I said, tell me when. I'll be there. That was, say, 1976 or 1977. It took till 1979, I think. Abraham called and said, I'm ready. Let's start the band. In that meantime, I'd already been working with him. I brought him in to play on Keith's albums. So he said, who do you want in the band? I said, I'd love to play with Alex Acuna. And I also, Dean Parks had been my friend back in Texas. Dean Parks would be great. And then Harlan and Hadley would be great, I think, to do this. And so that's how it started. We got together, everyone brought in songs, and we started practicing. We practiced a couple of times, and we just said, okay, Baked Potato's going to give us a Monday night. And we went in to play at the Baked Potato on Monday night, and it was a line. And they advertised our names, and there were so many people, we had no idea. And we did that every Monday night for several years. And that's how the first album came about. And that's how the birth of the band. And John Phillips and Dean Parks did not want to travel, so we replaced John Phillips with Husto, and we just stayed with one guitar. So that was the beginning.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, you'd done a lot of producing, but when that album came out in 83, of Talk About More Than a Feeling, Bill stepped in, not Bill Maxwell, Bill Cheney, right?
Yeah, Bill offered to produce the album, and, you know, he was the best engineer we knew and had a great studio, and so it was great to work with him. We recorded essentially pretty live, you know, with very minimal overdubs in the studio. Maybe add an organ on something or double a guitar part, or Alex would add a little more percussion. It was essentially us playing live at the Baked Potato.
It's hard to resist a strong Latin influence like that album. And Breaker Records was just being distributed by Sparrow, I think, at the time. But that song, More Than a Feeling, talk about that song for a moment.
Hadley Hockensmith wrote that, and we liked it. And that just ended up being the title of the album.
It's hard to say no when you're enjoying what you're doing so much. You have so much fun doing it.
I love it. I love making music, and I love the Lord with all my heart. So if I could do anything, what I tried to do didn't always succeed, but I tried to make everything I did in Christian music as good as I could and as good as anybody else was doing. I didn't think Christian music should be second class at all.
Exactly.
I didn't look at it as a lesser form of music. I thought it should be a greater form of music. So I took it very seriously. My mission was that if I did something, 1974, it should sound good in 2020. And thankfully, a lot of it still does. The Winans records I did still hold up to all the R&B people that listen to it. Some of Andre's records still hold up. Keith's records hold up, and I'm thankful for that.
I want to talk about an instrumental focus. Wasn't there an album called Celebration? It was live, I believe, on Sparrow in 1984, live. Had more success in Europe, maybe, than other places. You didn't produce it, but...
No, it was the band. We produced it as a band.
As a band, yeah.
We recorded. We brought over a good engineer from England. Keith Grant, who had done a lot of the Rolling Stones records, was the engineer at Olympic Studios. He came over and recorded us at a hall in Gothenburg, or actually like an arena, more like a basketball arena, called Scandinavium was the name of the arena. Recorded us there and recorded us in a concert house in Stockholm. And we picked the performances from that. That's a live album we're putting on there. Well, I hope so. It was one we had fun with. The band was a celebration. Celebration of making music, celebration of our love for the Lord, and a celebration of our friendship. So the band was fun.
You're listening to a great song called Celebration with Koinonia, and I'm so happy my friend drummer Carl Albrecht let me know that Bill was going to be in Nashville. And this gave me an opportunity to reconnect after all these years.
And Raquel, Carl Albrecht, who's a blessing to me, a wonderful, wonderful person, a great drummer, tell him hello, and then I appreciate him.
This is Jerry Bryant, and you're listening to a special interview with Bill Maxwell, who produced all the albums for the late Keith Green, Andre Crouch, and so many more. But I ask Bill this personal question, that as wonderful as it was to produce and play music, it came with a cost, didn't it?
Well, you know, there's a devil, and he always tries to hit you at your weak spots. And the biggest thing, the worst thing that happened to me was by being so busy and by being so gone and thinking about everything first, that I left, my wife was left at home and built her own life about it. And when I got off the road and came home, I lost, the marriage failed because of that. Mm-hmm. And that threw me for a loop for 10 years. And just getting back in the Word, being back in church, sound teaching, some being loved by wonderful people like Abraham Laboriel and Rose Stone, and just reminded me that God let me know that he still loved me, and I was able to, you know, be restored. I left Christian music. I left Christian music and right after Koinonia broke up and the Winans and Andre, I left, I moved to television. I said, I'm just going to go do a day job. I became a music director for TV series and had a lot of success. At one time, I was a music director on 7 TV series at the same time. But again, I was doing the same thing, which is just work, 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 so I don't have to face things. In the late 1900s and 1990s, I said, this is enough of that. It's time to get back to where I need to be spiritually. I started maintaining more of a presence at the Church on the Way, being available to play in the worship services, being under Jack Hayford's teaching. And then after 10 years of being divorced, and I had an 8-year-old son, when my wife decided she didn't want to be married anymore, he was now 18. After 10 years, I married my wife, who worked at the Church on the Way. She was in charge of the music department under Dr. Tom McDonald. And she had a similar thing happen to her, that her marriage failed. And so we've been married now 26 years, coming on. And God really restored me and I think, and us to each other. And now it's a daily walk. I think that you have to evaluate everything with the Lord daily. Get up and pray. Get up and read your word. Try to help somebody. Be kind. Think about your actions. Think about, am I doing right? Be aware. And so God have mercy on me and help me. And I'm much happier than I was. I'm not working like I was. I'm much happier than I was when I was working all the time. I was just lost in my work. I was just like another driven person trying to go be in the entertainment business. Mm. I was doing movies. I was doing televisions. We had this show, Top 10. And I was more miserable than them. I was making more money. It didn't mean anything. It was not for my heart.
Bill, that touches my heart and your transparency. I've watched this happen with so many people, and not everybody comes back. Sometimes it's just too much to give up the fame and the fortune. Even though they're miserable, they just don't know how to come back. But Holy Spirit, he's so willing to do whatever it takes, and you have said yes. It's a walk of surrender.
know, Jesus is real. And I've just had several friends in this last month that went on to be with heaven. And I said, if this isn't real, we've wasted 50 years and it's real. So we understand that there's a life much better than we have here and much more important. And Jesus said, invest in those things that are eternal, not in things that are temporary. And so that's my focus now.
One more album. We could talk about all of them. I don't know if we'll get around to the self-entitled one that Royal put out. But Frontline had an impact on me because it seemed to me that Frontline's album by Sparrow, 1986, maybe a stronger compositional structure, maybe a little bit more accessible fusion, more polished. I'm sure that comes with years of practicing and being together in friendship. Was there more intentionality? Something just popped open? Or how would you describe that season for you?
You know, I don't know. Look, the More Than a Feeling album, the first album, was a representation of what we were live at the Baked Potato. It recorded pristinely by Bill Chenet. The Celebration was a live album, so that's exactly live. That's what we were. And this was the first studio album, I would say, that we actually went into where we... Okay, we'll record the song, see what they need, a little more of this, a little more of that, and we treated it like a record recording. So that was probably the difference. Compositionally, Greg Matheson helped in the production. We submitted all these songs that we had to Greg, and Greg did a good job picking out the songs. I didn't want to put myself in being a producer of the band, and I don't think anybody wanted that job. Greg got us started with it, and then after we cut the tracks, Greg left, and I kind of finished it up. But we treated it more like an album.
I have to say this. How do people remember all the dates and the times and the players so well? But I guess when you live it, it just comes like breathing, doesn't it?
I have a really good memory. That's just been... I have my baby book my grandmother made. It says, has an exceptional memory. For some reason, I can remember the dates, and I can remember what people were wearing, and I remember what studio we were in. I don't think everybody else is the same. Abraham is good memory. Hadley, not as much. Harlan, not as much. There when he was here. Alex, were pretty good. But I remember, if it's something important to me, I usually remember details about it.
I have one last thing. It's almost redundant to say this, but I'm saying it because maybe you can expound on it if you'd like. Did the groove, or does the groove ever feel like a form of worship?
Well, you're asking that. That's a deep question, because I believe rhythm is math. And I believe that the solar system was made by rhythms, by math, mathematics, equations. And so if you get really close to God, He is the creator of the grooves and the math and all those things. And so, yes, that pulse. I can be in touch with some things that are spiritual when I'm playing in the grooves. It's not emotional, and it's not my own mind. There is something deep that you can get into. And I, of course, that's what you call an anointing. But there's a place, you know, you have to understand that God, our creator, is the most brilliant being that could ever be, that can figure out all these animals and put all these things in place and make all these equations and things we're trying to relate to. Well, music is a form of that. And, he loves music. And we haven't even begun to tap the source of what he is with music, because I believe for every tone we hear, there's probably 100, maybe 1,000 tones or more in between those tones that we're not even aware of.
Uh-huh.
And the same things with the rhythms. And so as you get in touch with more things, it gets deeper, yes, and it's worship for me, because I can't get to that place unless I'm worshiping. I don't think you really can. You look at some of the greatest musicians, their lives may have been a mess, but like John Coltrane, he was trying to reach God. He was trying to express himself, going places that no one had ever gone before. It's the same thing with Bach. The harmony, it's the foundations. That was worship. It's getting into that place and divine inspiration. So yeah, the music is deep. You'll never perfect it. You'll never get close to that. But God gives inspiration for it. But what God cares about more than the music is our hearts and our lives, the way when we do it.
This is Jerry Bryan, and I just wanted to reset what we were doing in case you just tuned in. I don't know where the time's gone. So much more to talk about, but I want to refocus again on the impact of the late Keith Green and ask Bill how he walked out that kind of spiritual urgency, not focusing on commercial polish, even going so far as Keith deciding to do a pay-for-what-you-can-afford record distribution.
How did you adapt to a ministry first mindset?
Well, Keith told me what he had in mind. He didn't want to be driven by money. He said, I don't like selling these things. I don't like selling myself, and I don't like selling the records, but I know I got to, you know, I can't pay for it all myself. I got to figure a way to do it. And so he had been offered contracts by a lot of different labels. I had labels approach me to try to help me get Keith to leave Sparrow. So he re-signed with Sparrow. And then he felt God was telling him, you need to give these away. So he went to Sparrow, and Billy Ray graciously let him out of his contract. And so Keith said, I will, his philosophy was, I will send one free record per household, and you can give whatever you can. If you don't have any money, it's fine. If you want to give to help with expenses, that's great. And I think that I think the figure he told me was either 35 or 40% of the records that we put out were free. And the other 60% or 65%, they paid twice what they would have paid. So all of a sudden, Keith was making much more money than he would have for a record company. He didn't have any idea how to expect it. And he was trying to figure out, what can I do with that? And that's how the ministry in the last days, trying to reach more people, try to do more bigger concerts, free concerts, promote your own concert so that they don't have to sell tickets and you can let the people in for free. Keith was all about giving the gospel for free.
You know, that makes me want to go back just a second and ask you another personal question, because you were so close to Keith. Maybe this is how I'm looking at it. How hard was it to keep the spiritual intensity Keith didn't want to lose in the studio, so that you, as the drummer, percussionist, and producer, didn't overplay it? In other words, I'll put it another way. How do you protect the anointing in the studio? I mean, that's something that might be more difficult than people would realize.
You know, I think just having the right heart for it. We had intercessors. You were probably one of them. Mm-hmm. We always had people praying when we were working, and we prayed before our sessions, and we tried to enter into the right spirit of what was being sung and what was being said. It wasn't just another recording session. Mm-hmm. We looked at it as an opportunity to do something special. And I loved making music with Keith. He was passionate, and we had fun.
Well, were there songs that required a little bit more restraint from you as a drummer or not?
He never really picked on me very much about my drum parts. I tried to play the song. And, you know, there were some things I could do a little more with, like the Easter song or, you know, some other song. There's other things I had to be very sensitive to it and not get in the way.
For someone who's not done that before, you have, but how do you build a song that was just two track and then make it what it came to be known and so powerfully used around the world?
I don't know. You know, you do the best you can. I look at it the way that... One of the first albums I worked on for Andre was live at Carnegie Hall. And I wasn't at Carnegie Hall, I wasn't there. And Andre had the album, and he liked his performance, but he didn't like his band. And they had recorded his band with just a piano pick, or recorded the concert with a piano pickup, which is different than a microphone. And Keith was spot on. He always performed well. I mean, it's essentially the same as he was in the studio. He sang and played live in the studio, so that was, his part was fine.
Create in me a clean heart, oh God, and renew a right spirit within me. Oh God. Oh, 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 oh.
create in me a clean heart. Oh, God,
sing it to Jesus.
And renew a right spirit within me.
Close your eyes and worship. Create in me a clean heart.
Create in me a clean heart.
Cast me not away from thy presence.
Cast me not away from thy presence, O Lord.
Take not thy Holy Spirit.
Take not thy Holy Spirit from me. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. The joy of thy salvation.
And renew a right spirit.
Hopefully you've been tuned in to this listener-supported episode of Full Circle with my special guest, Bill Maxwell. Now, just give me a moment to give you the website address, www.FullCircleJesusMusic.com. That's FullCircleJesusMusic.com. Your response and your giving is so encouraging when you help. So if you want to send the show to others or get the word out as to where to hear the show, there are many internet platforms, including iHeartRadio. Well, back to the last song on this episode with Bill Maxwell. I told him how a song I recorded in Carbondale, Illinois, was later produced and impacted a world of young missionaries. Do you know what song I'm talking about?
There's one song I want to just talk about before I forget. Do you know the history of how you got hold of Here I Am, Send Me? It was included in the Ministry Years, Volume 2, 1977-1979, but it has a unique story to it, and I'm wondering if you're aware.
No.
Well, I recorded that song in Carbondale, Illinois. The story is that the two times I had Keith come to Illinois before I moved to California, one day, he wasn't thinking, obviously. I said, I want to run a two-track recording of your concert, just keyboard and vocal. I said, go ahead. And I recorded it, and I put it in my vault, and I just had forgotten about it until I got a call from Melanie after Keith had passed away. We're looking for any songs that might never have been published. And wouldn't you know, they found Here I Am, Send Me just from that concert only. Had never been recorded as far as I know, or at least wasn't published. And that's where you took the song, enhanced it, and put it on Ministry Years CD. I'm so grateful to the Lord that we didn't erase and throw away that tape. And I didn't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't. The only thing I knew is that Spirit kept wanting me to keep putting out anything they could find of Keith. And I finally said, you know, I got to stop this because Keith's going to be really mad at me the next time I see him if I keep putting out cassette recordings of his concert, putting them on a multi-track machine, overdubbing strings, drums, guitars, everything I could. And it was getting more difficult and more difficult. And in the end, I just said, I can't do anymore.
This world is falling apart, dying for love from a broken heart. Oh, here am I, send me. Though there's really not that much I can do, what I have seems so small, but I wanna give it all to you. Harvest was great, but Lord, looks like the workers are late.
It's getting hard to understand how they ignore your great command.
Oh, here am I, send me. Though you said the ones who labor are few, still my heart hears the
call, and I want to give it all to you. Oh, just to reach the ones nobody does, give up my pride.
Listening. Until next time, keep your eyes to the sky and let your light shine. This is Jerry Bryant. Full Circle is recorded in the Jesus Solid Rock Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. Full Circle is a JSR production.
This is Full Circle.